What's up, everyone? You're listening to Why Yes, We're Friends, the Not Another Sports podcast where we discuss myriad topics that mostly expose us for how alike we really are. I'm Ronnie Sullivan, and alongside me, as always, is Brendan Wong. How's it going, Brendan?
It's good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. The WWE has been getting ready for the upcoming WrestleMania season, and they've been running a marathon of matches on YouTube. And pretty much anytime I just need something on in the background, I've kind of been putting that one on. So it's been kind of fun to just get a little nostalgic for some old matches, to see some
Nice.
ones that perhaps I haven't seen.
How
And
far back did they go?
they have as far back as the Hulk and Ultimate Warrior one, which I think was
Oh, wow.
in
Okay.
90 or 91. That one seems to be the only one that goes that far back. Otherwise, they have just maybe one or two from like the Attitude Era. I want to say most of them are pretty much within like the last like 10 to 15 years, which is nice. That's, I would say, mostly my blind spot when it comes to this sort of thing. I've mostly kind of really gotten back into it in like the last few years, but I'd say there was a good portion of the 2010s that I wasn't really paying too much attention in any direction when it came to wrestling. So to see some of these matches have also been kind of like, oh wow, all right, so and so who's now maybe an actor or retired or anything like that.
Sure.
It's like, oh wow, they were a good wrestler, or they put on a good match or whatever. How about you?
Well, yeah, I've dipped and dived through wrestling as well, and I can to yeah I you know time taking some time off and coming back and taking some time. I haven't been on wrestling for a while, so I'm looking forward to talking about that at some point with you very soon.
I'm sure we will.
But yeah, I've been busy. We've been running up and down the state a little bit. Got out to see some family. I recently celebrated a birthday, as did my wife. So we've been taking the she had a bunch of time off, so we took some days to go celebrate us with our kids a couple of different ways. It's been nice, sort of, eating our way through our favorites and going to museums and ball games and pinball museums and all sorts of good stuff.
Oh man, that sounds like an awesome time.
It is. It's been a busy couple of weeks.
Busy but fun. Oh,
Yes.
I'm glad to hear it. And happy birthday to you both.
Cheers. Thank you, friend.
Yeah, no problem. I do believe though you might have been able to throw a little hook into the water for us that could segue our next topic. And I'd say
Bass fishing?
Yes. No, unless you want to talk about the cooking of bass that you catch. But I was thinking about maybe transitioning to more or less some food and the foods of many kinds. It could just be foods that we've encountered at stadiums, but I think we might just let this one run a little bit.
That sounds fun, man. Yeah, I'm on board. I can all two things. I can always eat, and I can always talk about food.
Well, all right. I mean, you do make some mean food. Full disclosure, I've had plenty of it, and all of it has been fantastic. So I know you're a pretty amazing cook.
Oh, well, I thank you for those kind words. I feel like maybe a glorified home chef at best, but I certainly love to cook. I love to eat, and I love to help others appreciate that as well. So
oh yeah,
I thank you for those kind words.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to food, mostly at least around this house, I've myself gotten into cooking recently. It was kind of one of those pandemic things that, you kind of pick up along the way. I more or less just kind of realized that I had a bit of a knack for following recipes and not really messing it up fairly frequently, which is a pretty good trick to do. And so the last 2 years or so, we've been having kind of, I want to say, themed dinner nights, more or less themed around what we're watching that night or what we're doing.
That's fun.
Like on the nights that say like we'll play Mario Kart as a group, I'll make us Japanese bar food. And then we'll get, of course,
okay,
like begin the process of getting just a little bit tipsy before we start playing Mario Kart with everybody.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the drinking and driving is a lot of fun
yes.
in that sense.
In that sense, yes.
Pull the car over to the side of the road.
Yes. Pull out your Switch and begin playing. I'm just kidding.
Do not play your Switch while driving. No. We here at YS We're Friends are staunchly against anybody playing their Switch while driving. I just want to go on the record as saying that.
Same here. I mean, you've spoken well for both of us, friend, and spoken well for both of us.
I hope it didn't need to be said, but I'm glad it was.
No. But, for instance, other ones that we do, we watch a lot of hockey in this house, especially, you know, saying as how it is hockey season and we're reaching the end of it. Candace, being from the East Coast and a fan of the New York Islanders, I'm a fan of the New Jersey Devils, and we tend to do a lot of weirdly themed, like New York or New Jersey themed type dinners whenever we decide that we're going to watch a game. And we've done this for really unimportant games, or at least unimportant to us, where it'd be like, oh yeah, you know, tonight the Islanders and the Predators from Nashville are playing tonight. And it's like, all right, well, let's make ourselves some, you know, some New York style pizza tonight, and you know, maybe we'll bring out some hot dogs and
oh, that's interesting. You don't go with the Nashville hot chicken so you can devour your opponent.
So we've done it the other way too, where we've also themed it around where they're visiting. Like for instance, we've made poutine when they've gone to Canada, or
sure.
We've made it on Saturday nights for hockey night in Canada, which
sure.
At least if we watch a Canadian team's feed on a Saturday night, we tend to get their special like TSN hockey night in Canada special feed.
Oh yeah, the da-da-da.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a big deal there, and so every now and then we've done that kind of stuff. But yeah, we would do something along the lines of like a Nashville hot chicken to celebrate watching just a regular Tuesday night Predators game.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we sometimes just let, we really just let what we're doing that night in some way drive it. You know, it could literally also be what we're doing later that night. We're gonna watch we've been watching Succession lately, so in order to every time we've gotten into the beginning of a new season, we've made something fancy.
Nice.
You know, just got ritzy and rich, and
you pull something out from Party Down.
Yeah, exactly.
In honor of Adam Scott. Did you ever watch that show? That was a really funny show, man.
I did. No, I think you're thinking of the work one. No, Succession is the one about the billionaires that was on HBO.
Oh, that's right. What was I thinking of? The one on Apple TV.
I know. I'm thinking the same thing, and I think it is Severance.
Severance. Thank you. I had the right sounds in my mouth.
Yeah, it was Severance is that one. I mean, I kind of think I've made that same mistake, but yeah, we've been watching Succession, the one about the one that's supposed to be a facsimile to the Murdoch family and the Fox Empire, and
yes,
and just how messed up the family dynamics can be when it comes to who's going to be in charge and the power dynamics of this and that, and how obviously just toxic money can make people, especially those underneath the next generation under, who didn't quite get everybody there.
The ones who are perhaps still suckling at the teat.
Exactly. A little bit more entitled. But yeah, little fun little things like that have just driven our meals lately. And I've been sharing a little bit on Instagram. You can catch them every now and then, at least on my stories, at the Ronarchy. Just to, you know, push it out there. Just, you know, plug, plug, plug. But yeah, no, I mean, it's all sorts of things. And honestly, I bet if I look through it, there was a point in time last year where I think for a solid 10 to 11 months, I was journaling every meal that I had made. Have you seen the new Batman, the one with Robert Pattinson?
I haven't seen it, no.
Okay. So in that one, he does a whole portion at the very beginning. Oh.
I did. I have seen that one. I'm sorry.
So you remember at the beginning when he's kind of narrating like his first, or yes, his night on Halloween, and it's all grim. And
yes,
it's suddenly at one point at the very end of it, when he's back in the Batcave, you realize he's been journaling it the whole time.
Yes. Yes.
So that's based on a concept from when Grant Morrison was writing the Batman series back at like the end of the 20 or 2000s, the beginning of the 2010s. He had this idea that Batman journaled pretty much every night that he would go out just to make sure that he didn't forget anything, so that was why he was constantly like almost computer-esque in all of his knowledge.
That notebook is the most important tool, right?
Right, and it truly was how he was detective, because he could remember, oh, I think I've dealt with something like this before, and then go back through his own notes and literally be like, no, yeah, back in September I saw graffiti very similar to that. And he called it the black cookbook or the black casebook. And so I started kind of journaling, and it started off as a bit of a joke. I was like, I put 2 tablespoons of this in the
I can, yeah, the deep breathing.
Yeah, but very quickly became an actual like pouring of like ideas, thoughts, the experimentation, the things I thought that didn't work, the things I might want to try next time.
Nice.
The I put too much spice in this, or the I didn't put enough heat in that, you know, that kind of thing.
That's an interesting way to do it. As you're learning or teaching yourself, that's a really smart way to do it, to keep track of your what works and what doesn't. That's something that I've definitely been taught. A lot of the recipes that I know by heart are ones that were taught to me by family members through at different points. Oh, the black cookbook, I see it. Ronnie's holding it up to the screen, and it is the black casebook, but cookbook. Awesome.
And it's practically full, but yeah, you were saying as before I derailed that.
No, that's all right. That was something I was taught to do as well, to make the notations. Very little was written down. A lot of the stuff that I know was passed on through methodology, through sitting at the table, forming the dumplings by hand, and watching the process. Not necessarily ever being told that you add this much cilantro and this much water chestnut. But eventually getting to a point where I'm told how much is added based on whatever it is I'm making. And something my dad always instilled was to make notes about that. And if you're going to vary the recipe at all, if you're going to add something to it, then annotate that you did that. Remember it. If you liked it, go back and make sure you do it next time.
Right.
To do it separately, though, to have the recipe and to have the annotations separately was always a key for what I learned anyway.
Makes sense. You can always go back and change things again, or perhaps if it didn't work out, go back to the original, try again.
Yes.
Back to the drawing board, as they say.
The respect for the recipe for the people that wrote it down, that came up with it, and wanted to make sure it could be duplicated. I feel like it's important to have that base to go from, for sure.
Remember that labor of love.
Yeah, it is truly that. I do the majority of the cooking in our house, I think, and part of that is because my wife works so dang hard. But she is no slouch in the kitchen. And I will also mention that my wife is vegetarian. And I am not, nor are my children, but one of my children has a very severe food allergy. So there are definitely nights where I'm making dinner and we have three different cutting boards, which is a challenge in and of itself. But we're always on the search to try and find that meal that satisfies everyone, or that we can just add a piece of chicken to make it suitable for the kids. Take the chicken out so that Laura can eat it, but still have some protein in there. I should also mention Laura eats fish, so it's a lot less challenging than it might sound initially. But the severe food allergies are really what present the real challenge.
I was going to say, just a little slightly less challenging, only
I
slightly.
also have very severe food allergies, but I've lived with them my whole life, and the ingredients I'm allergic to are far less common than what my son is allergic to. So not only do I have it easier, but I've also dealt with it for longer. No, it's part of the process of me doing so much cooking. I try and incorporate my kids as often as I can, especially the one with the severe allergies who's going to end up having to cook for himself a lot because there are a lot of things he can't eat. He's allergic to wheat and dairy. When I say allergic, I mean not just like it makes my tummy hurt, but like anaphylactic shock, meaning you stop breathing for a lot of those things. It's very scary. Same way some people are allergic to bee stings. It's scary as a parent because there's nothing that I want more than to nourish my child. And there's nothing that terrifies me more than the concept of nourishment taking his life away. You know, it's,
I can only imagine.
yeah. it's something that that we are constantly to say that we're vigilant about it is an understatement, I think, but we're trying to as a family, we're trying to all be aware and open to ideas that maybe we haven't been. For instance, this last week, we were able to go to sushi together as a family because there were enough things on a menu that my youngest kids, the twins, could eat something. My wife and I could have sushi, and we found plenty of sushi that Frankie likes that is also, no wheat soy sauce and no dairy. And no sesame seeds because that's one too. So it's just nice to be able to go out as a family, something that a lot of families do a lot of the time.
Absolutely.
We have done probably five times as a
Oh.
family. So it's really nice to sort of be opening new doors and as I've been telling myself, I know it's going to get easier the older he gets and the longer we deal with it, the longer he deals with it. But it doesn't change from day to day.
Yeah.
But that being said, there's still plenty out there that he can eat and plenty that we try and explore. As a result, he is pretty much willing to try anything, as long as he's confident, as long as he's been told that it's safe, So I get really I give him a lot of props. I think that he's willing to try a lot of things that other kids wouldn't just because he's not able to eat a lot of the things that a lot of kids can. So
Sure. Yeah, and if variety truly is the spice of life, then he's gotta go somewhere else sometimes. That's understandable, and yeah.
Well, but we do some theme nights as well at my house, just the same. We found some really good veggie brats, and then I can get some locally sourced bratwurst and some gluten-free buns, and we'll do like an opening day garlic fries. It's a big thing here in San Francisco. So we'll do some garlic fries and some bratwurst for baseball or for football. We've got the dairy-free cheeses. We do some nachos. I do a pretty mean onion dip, if I do say so myself. But it's something that's all Frankie friendly. It's what we call it. In my house, meaning
Double
that,
F.
basically meaning that anybody could eat it.
Absolutely, right? I guess that is one good point, is that if it's safe for him, it's pretty much safe for everyone.
I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but my wife has made cookies for our son's class before because if it's somebody's birthday, basically we're happy to make cookies and send them in so that everybody can have something instead of having to worry about whether or not a child is going to be excluded or be potentially exposed to a life-threatening allergen.
Yeah.
Fortunate for him, there is another one of his classmates also has some severe food allergies. And so, there have been a couple of times where that student has asked the teacher about whether or not they can eat it, and my son's teacher's response has been basically, if it's safe for Frankie, you can eat it because that's entirely the
There you go. What a good barometer for them as well.
pretty much.
That's cool.
We try and vary as much as we can. Again, the adventuresome spirit in him is strong. So, we do I found ways to do pasta carbonara and other dishes that I would have never made the way that I'm making them now, but that turn out to be pretty good, if I do say so myself.
Well, nice.
Yeah.
I can only imagine it's got to be all pretty flavorful and such. I mean, or at least as much.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. We watch a cooking program, and we'll watch somebody break out a skillet and whatever they're making. Oh yeah, and then we're gonna just put a little bit of butter, we're gonna sprinkle a little cheese, and our running joke is, oh, is that good? Is that good? Because that sounds like it's really yeah, sure, it's good. Of course it's good. Oh, is it when you take a bunch of macaroni and you mix in a bunch of butter and cheese and bacon, does that taste good? Yeah, no shit.
Thanks for rubbing it in.
Yeah, but if you can't just take regular macaroni and regular cheese, it's a much different challenge.
Oh.
They definitely have the kids definitely have their favorites, but sort of a thing when the twins started going to school, they started being exposed to cafeteria lunch and foods that they hadn't had at home. The first day that they came home and had pizza, real pizza with real cheese on it was monumental. My youngest son saying, "I had a cheeseburger. We could put cheese on these the whole time." Like him figuring out, like, we've just been having hamburgers at home because we don't
Right.
put cheese on them. But him, and then him being like, "Oh, that's we should do that at home."
Good discovery, buddy. Well done. Is
So I said to him, "Oh, is
that good? Yeah.
that
How do they handle it? I mean, they're younger, so I mean they've been dealing it with literally their whole lives and that stuff, but I'm sure as these things have opened up their eyes a little bit more, is there a feeling that you like you cheated them or anything like that, or is it a they're finally understanding?
Yeah, they. I mean, first and foremost, they love their brother and they would do anything for him because they're brothers, But I think that ultimately we try and keep them all on the same diet for the ease of cross-contamination or to cut down on cross-contamination. And they know, and there are certain things that really surprised me. Recently we had some regular hot dog buns in the house and some gluten-free buns in the house, and because they've eaten the gluten-free ones, I gave one of them a regular bun, and he's, yeah, it doesn't taste like a hot dog at home. It tastes like something else because it's not the ones we have at home. So
Yeah.
there's some associations that they have, and ultimately, I don't feel like they feel cheated. They get their opportunities, and it makes it that much more special when Frankie has a doctor's appointment and I get to take one of them to Taco Bell or something, whatever the case is, where they get to go and have something that's, like having a cheat day on a diet. You
Yeah.
get to go to the diner and
Sure.
have the cheeseburger.
That's
So
cool.
it's still, it just, it, we try and I try and not make food as a reward because it's something that we all have to do all the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like setting up a reward structure with food just personally sets up potentially problematic moments later in life. And especially with food allergies and accessibility, I feel like we just try and keep it straightforward. But everybody has their own tastes, and that is certainly no different in this house. So we do our
Yeah.
best to accommodate everyone, and by we, like I said, most of the time it's me doing my best to
Sure.
accommodate everyone, which I'm happy to do because that's what it takes.
The chef's blessing and the chef's curse. I mean, I wouldn't say that it would, well, it could probably cause some problems ahead in the future, but I think those are actually moments that you might find are actually really endearing and specifically bonding.
Yes, no doubt they are.
Like my mom apparently was very she just didn't handle eating McDonald's very well when we were younger, and so it became one of those like one of the only fast food chains that we couldn't really go to when she was around. But when my stepdad came into the picture and they started dating, and she was going to nursing school at night, and he was kind of taking care of us at night and taking us out to dinner. It became kind of like, at first it became kind of the I'll be the cool guy who takes you to McDonald's, but it also became kind of that initial bonding thing, like, hey, look at you. Like, you've heard some things about how we never come, you're reaching out. It kind of created that thing, and it's become a lasting memory that we now still hold something like 25 years later.
And that's awesome, man. You know, because that's something that's that McDonald's, I feel like, is virtually universal in this country and in a lot of
Yeah.
countries. But I mean, that seems like a made for TV commercial, and it's but it's perfect. That's exactly what that is. I think that's great. That's a really heartwarming story, man.
Yeah, but I think you might end up with stuff, little stories like that in your future too, where you're just like, man, you remember every time when Frankie went to the doctor and we went to Taco Bell?
Yeah, I mean that's already
And
happening.
for sure. And and it'll drive like little bits of excitement. It'll be kind of like, and maybe not in like exactly that jealousy way, but in the this is me and dad time way. Like me and dad. Not us and dad, me and dad.
Yeah, and that's definitely part of that as well. We try and do our best to spend one-on-one time. It's so rare that any of us get that either my wife or I get the time to spend one-on-one with the child. So when we do, we try and make it special for us, for them, for to make it something that we can enjoy. And even if it's just running to the store, it doesn't have to be getting a treat as well. That's what I mean about the reward thing. I try and do something that is memorable, like going home a different route, letting them tell me where to drive when we're go, whatever it is, so that we can really have a chance to be interacting one-on-one, because otherwise it is a constant battle for who is being heard.
Absolutely. I can imagine. I only had one brother, but that was enough in my world.
Sure.
Then another one added to that picture might have it'd literally be that times another one, It's a one-to-one kind of thing. So, yeah. Well, good on you guys. It sounds like, again, these little things will create little lasting memories, and honestly, yeah, hold on to them.
Well, let me take a little break, but before we do, what is your signature dish? If this is Beat Bobby Flay, what are you bringing to the table? Why don't you think about that, and then we'll come back from our break.
All right, we'll catch you guys on the other side of And we're back. Brendan, when we went to break just mere seconds ago, at least by the podcasting world means, you had posited the question, what would be my, what was it,
Your signature dish,
my
yeah.
signature dish? Yeah. And I got to tell you, I think I could do a lot of dishes really well, but it, when it comes to like the absolute one,
Yeah.
it's something that I struggle to come up with, or at least it feels unimpressive. Some of the ones that I know would be like, oh yeah, no, that's the one that I always give people when they visit for the first time, or whatever. Like the simplest answer would be, I feel in the last 2.5 years or so, I've gotten really good at a New York bodega style chopped cheese.
No chopped cheese on a soft roll.
Yeah, but see, that's the idea of it, is it's like it is a signature dish of mine, but I do a lot of things that to try and make it as bodega-y as possible.
Well, walk the people through what is a chopped cheese.
So a chopped cheese, the easiest, like the elevator pitch of it, and the one that probably will piss off the most like New Yorkers who eat them on the regular, is that it is essentially a Philly cheesesteak meets a hamburger and the child that they create.
Okay.
The longer answer is that you take some, or you take ground beef, and you chop it up into as it cooks into smaller and smaller pebbly type bits. And then you add American cheese onto the top of it, some onion as well. And you just kind of mash it all together until it's basically a nice, like, kind of that cheese sticky consistency where you can scoop it up in one flat spatula bit,
Nice.
slam it onto the slot, a soft deli roll. And I normally dress it like I would a regular cheeseburger. Tomato, some pickle, some shredded lettuce, mayo, mustard,
Gotta have that shreddy letty.
shreddy letty. Oh, that's what makes it. And yeah, and of course, just to kind of again make it a little bit more of that authentic experience, I always wrap it in some sort of foil
Oh
or
yeah.
wax paper.
Nice.
Let it steam for a few minutes before you just
Yeah.
unwrap it
Oh,
and
it's not
eat
the
it.
same. I get it. You got to do that. It's got to go through that process. Everything has got to meld together that way.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I also make it a bit of an experience. Like, this is another one of those experience things. But my partner Candace and I, we put on specifically East Coast hip hop.
Okay.
Like, we play it like as if we were in a bodega. We have a stuffed cat
Not
that we
Dollar
put on
Mendy.
top of what?
Not Dollar Mendy in a bodega. Some hip hop though. Okay. Some Christopher Wallace.
Yeah,
Okay.
that some MF Doom,
Okay.
things like that.
Sure.
But we have a stuffed cat that we'll put on top of a bag of chips or
Nice.
a bag of bread nearby.
Nice. You gotta do. I do not eat food from bodegas that don't have shop cats. Because those are the ones that have rodents, bro.
I never thought about that, but that's an amazing
Oh, your
point.
mic is gone. I have no audio of you.
Uh-oh. You'll have to forgive us on that one. We had a little bit of audio difficulties on that last bit, but we're going to be cutting right back into now. And as Brendan noted here, we're talking about bodegas, shop cats, and the fun that I have when I make this sandwich. And that's really part of it, is that when I go for the chopped cheese, I'm going for the experience. Like, I'm not trying to make a gourmet chopped cheese, the finest bread and all that stuff. I almost always exclusively try and find a cheaply made deli roll or whatever that I can find at the more bulk bakery of my super nearby supermarket. Are you familiar with Desus and Miro?
Oh,
They did a chopped cheese taste test on their show once, in which
Ooh.
they tried two like local bodega chopped cheeses, and one made it a Whole Foods.
Let me guess which one was the winner.
Well, it was definitely one of the two bodega ones.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
But the best was, at one point, Miro goes back to eat a bite from one of the previous ones after eating the Whole Foods one, and he immediately goes, "Oh yeah, that's the stuff right there. See, that bread came from a bag."
Yeah, and that mayonnaise isn't vegan.
And it very much looked like Whole Foods had freshly baked their roll, and to their credit, that's probably what they were offering, was the experience, but their way.
Sure, a Whole Foods chopped cheese says everything.
Yeah, but I mean, I walk around calling Candace Poppy that, like, "Hey, you got the tomatoes ready for me, Poppy?"
That's funny, man.
Just try and have fun with it that way. But yeah, that's the one that I usually make people when they show up and they're asking about one of, something that I should make them that would make them feel at home, or at
Sure.
least at home in our house. How
Sure.
about you?
Oh, gosh. I do have a lot of, I don't want to say a lot, but I've got a handful in my repertoire. Probably, better known in my family for the red sauce. I used to make Sunday gravy, and then I married a pescatarian, vegetarian, if you prefer. But so I had to stop, braising the beef bones and the ground pork. My Sunday gravy eventually turned into a red sauce. I'm just a straight marinara. And then that was something I always used to finish with just a little bit of butter. And, if I had it, then I would use Parmesan cheese as I was making it to build those layers of flavor. But then as I began to cook more for my son and not wanting to do two separate pots, that has now evolved to what I would, what my family affectionately refers to as daddy's sauce, which I assure you is not as gross as it might sound. But it's basically just a Frankie friendly, red sauce that, that he likes and, the kids like, and, my wife likes, and I think it's pretty tasty, and we use it for everything. That becomes our pizza sauce when my wife makes Frankie friendly dough for pizza. It becomes, if I'm making a meatloaf, it becomes our topping for the four of us that are going to eat the meatloaf. I use that to add the moisture as well. But my signature dish, to put it on one thing, I would have to say, is probably the chicken wings that I know you've had. Chicken is such a great protein, and it's so versatile. But something about a breaded fried bird that is just tastes like home every time. I do a special preparation on a Chinese style chicken wing is what I was raised as it, because my family's Chinese. We always just called it food.
Sure.
So but I use there's this special technique where I remove the bones without using without cutting it, so that I wind up with more than one drumstick per wing, and bread them, fry them, serve that with some kimchi fried rice that takes little to no effort on the skillet. If as long as you're using that day old rice, then it's pretty easy to just whip up some fried egg and throw some kimchi and push it around and make yourself a nice bowl of rice with a couple of fried chicken wings. And it's humble, but it's satisfying. And it is, soul in a bowl.
Yeah, there's something to be said, sometimes about simplicity. And it sounds very simple, but oh man, I can speak for experience, dear listener. It's an experience to be had. It's pretty good stuff. It's also really fun to look at too. I think I've seen other chefs call it lollipopping.
Sure.
But yeah, it basically kind of creates like that little, like, more concentrated, like, meat end, while also having like this really nice, like, kind of
handle,
thin bone, yeah, handle bone coming out at the end, but it's just bone. You don't have to do the, like, gnaw off the little sinew pieces at the end of it when you're done. Yeah, right. No. Why do we do this to ourselves? I mean, I guess now I feel a little bit better about the chopped cheese choice, because yeah, it's that idea that it's the simple thing,
Yeah.
Because yeah, when you're talking about like maybe going up against, Chef Bobby Flay, like, I don't know, I immediately start like going to my mind and being like, oh geez, what would like Gordon Ramsay do? What would like Thomas Keller make? Where would they serve at the French Laundry? Sure. That would just knock somebody's socks off and
truffle
whatever,
fries like, and peanut butter cups.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, some chicken wings and some rice sound good. Nice little bodega sandwich or mm-hmm. bodega style sandwich and some foil sounds pretty good.
And you spend so much of your early adult life trying these new things, and I feel like just in talking with the people that I've met, a lot of the people older than me spend so much of their life trying to recreate or find that taste from childhood that they were looking for After having tried all the new stuff, tried all the stuff that they wanted to, and the thing that they want the most is that meal at the table that mom cooked when you were sick or whatever it was. Like that's the search that I have heard about so often.
It's true. I mean, honestly, that is a lot of what I've gone to do is either the things that I had in my childhood that other people have made, or the things that I was lucky enough to experience at a restaurant of other sorts. But yeah, it's been, a bit of a fun journey going on. I think a really big thing, a big help for my palate has been the time spent working at a grocery store. Hearing other people's recipes for just simple things that I never thought would get used for such things, or just finding new ways to use the very simple things that I was already using. Just a new sauce to put in it, or a new temperature to cook it at, kind of deal. For like length of time or braising, or all the new little techniques. But you're right. At the same time, I mean, I think kind of a funny little thing that's kind of been just swimming underneath the current of this conversation that we've been having here is just to put it plainly, love. You've talked about the explorations in your own cooking based out of the love of your own family and their personal needs. When it comes to diet, both out of necessity and out of choice, but the reality of it is we could have spent this entire time, just complaining about like, oh, geez, man, I just want to do this. My son wants to put cheese on a burger. I wish I could do it for him. And it's you're instead the other way around, talking about how fun it's been going. I make three different meals sometimes, and when I get my chance, I have something special with them, and I do this, and it's been fun to hear those types of things. And when it comes to me making my chopped cheese, we have the experience, but it's really just me hanging out with my partner and
Sure.
just laughing every time I call her Poppy.
Yeah.
And yeah, just having like little dumb things like that around. Another fun thing about the simplicity is, we were talking about just like you were talking about like making opening day baseball foods, and that's love of the game right there. Finding ways to enjoy what you were already going or enjoy further what you were already going to enjoy.
Yes. Yeah. An enhancement.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of fun that food, in a weird way, while you said earlier, is something we all have to eat, we have to do it. But it's just fun how we find these fun and odd little ways in order to enhance the things that we're already doing around us with it, to strengthen our bonds and relationships with those around us. I don't know. It got really deep in a hurry, didn't
I guess so, man. But it's not
it?
a doesn't make it untrue. And I don't always appreciate it because it is a lot of work. I don't always appreciate that perspective, but I like hearing that that's at least what you're seeing, because it certainly does. The labor that I do anyway certainly comes from a place of love. And I know that there are plenty of people who take that opportunity in the kitchen to express themselves creatively, and I feel like I'm happy to observe and sample as much of that as they would like. Love. It all comes down to that. You are absolutely right.
No, it's a love language for me too. I mean, I've a lot of the journey that I came on when it came to learning how to cook better in the times of COVID, when it was at its height, it really came from wanting to support the local businesses that were struggling when it came to restaurants. How there was that whole campaign about, hey, order delivery, like get that place that you always ate at, and like just let them know you love them. Like, there were all those like little hacks where it's just like, hey, like, they have little dishes that you can just buy it and then tip them a whole bunch. Like, But, you know, I'm not exactly made of a whole lot of money. So while that was a fun campaign, I still missed a lot of things that I couldn't get to.
Sure. Yeah, it wasn't a realistic campaign for a
Right.
lot of people, sure.
But what it did kind of encourage me to do was it started off with me wondering if I could make chicken tikka masala.
Okay.
And
Without a tandoori oven.
yeah, without a tandoori oven, sadly. But I did broil the chicken to kind of create a little bit of that char.
Nice.
But I made it mostly from scratch and marinated the chicken over a day and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'd looked at a couple of like YouTube videos on that and taken notes, but it really was the challenge just to see if I could do it. But it also came from the idea that it's like, if I was gonna end up cooking a whole bunch for the people around me, I should probably have more in the repertoire than just, you know, 5 to 10 dishes that I just lean on a bunch. That was more or less, that was my dad's tactic when I was a kid. And I think it worked for him for a while, but I don't think he realized how quickly like the rest of us all kind of burned out on realizing, you know,
Oh,
seeing
yeah.
the, looking in the cupboard and realizing like, oh, we're doing all 5 of those again this week, huh?
It gets stale
Cool.
fast, yeah.
Yeah, and just knowing exactly what it was based on the ingredients, even as a kid, just like, oh, I see 1, 2, okay, cool, we're doing that. Got it.
Yeah, you got to keep it fresh.
Yeah,
And
so, you know.
yeah, you gotta keep it seasonal. That's something that we do as often as we can. You know, shopping at our farmers market locally is a great way to support local farmers as well as the ones that are willing to travel to us. You know, we have produce, one of my favorite farms in Fresno. I have to remember the name so I can shout them out next time. But there's a particular farm in Fresno that hits all of the Asian greens that I otherwise have to drive to a specialty market to get. And then all the like local, I live in a relatively agricultural area that's known for its cherries and stone fruits in general. So come summertime, corn is another big thing, but by keeping it seasonal, it keeps it fresh, keeps the kids involved that way. They get excited. We go to the market, they get excited to help pick out the stuff, and really helps to not only foster that engagement and that excitement about the food, but it does keep the palate fresh. It keeps us from eating, you know, we don't eat asparagus if it's not springtime. You know, we don't eat for the most part anyway. We don't eat artichokes if it's not summertime. And largely the fruits are that way too. But my kids will eat just about any of the fruits that we see there. We just come home with baskets full, and they just devour all the fruit. It's nice to have access to so much fresh food and help keep it fresh in our house.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we at one point lived in, at least as far as Southern California was concerned, one of the larger agricultural hubs in Ventura County. And that was a really refreshing thing to come from the deserts that I grew up in and to suddenly just be surrounded in just fresh produce and the access to it and not just at the farmers markets, but just on the side of the road
Oh,
stands,
yeah.
the direct to you know, the direct-to-consumer sales that were happening, like at the very front of these farms, the fields that you
Oh.
would pass and see the actual product being grown.
The best strawberries in the world are in Camarillo, and I'm not going to say where because I don't want them to be gone the next time I get there.
You'll have
Oh,
to let me know what they are off air because I would absolutely love to know. I mean, it's. Yeah, it's one thing I remember really looking forward to was Oxnard has that strawberry festival
yes.
and it's one of those if you're gonna boast having any sort of festival, you better have some damn good whatever it is you're boasting.
Yeah.
And while I'm not gonna have this or have that argument about like, oh well, I think Oxnard has better strawberries than Camarillo because they're next door neighbors. This would
Sure.
be they're it's the same soil. It's just this
Right.
imaginary border that's but it comes down to that same idea that it's that I get what you're saying that I always got really excited around strawberry season, you know, because it would be so fresh and they were right there. I didn't have to, you know, wait for my local Vons to get it or anything like
Right.
that. I could find it like in my town, ready to go right
Yeah.
now.
Yeah, it's funny. It's to go to a local supermarket and see a box of produce from the town that you're in knowing that that had to be picked and then shipped and then shipped back and then unloaded and put on the shelf there. Instead of just going on Saturday down to the farmer's market and picking it up.
Well, when we worked at a grocery store in Ventura County, I remember we had a couple of mornings where we would just point that out, like, "Hey, look at this lemon box. It says Santa Paula on it." But I guarantee you, this went to the warehouse
in Monrovia or wherever it was,
and then shipped back to us.
Yep. Yeah, we went to that farmer's market together several times years ago. I remember going down on Sundays at that market in Oxnard.
That one was really fun because it was also by the water. So it had some fish.
Yes.
It had, because it was also like, you know, farm, like near agricultural and farm areas. I also remember it having just fresh meats as well. Just,
yes,
man, it was quite a grab bag of just freshest stuff. And yeah, I remember that was an exciting time too, because you began to learn more about the seasons.
Sure.
I feel like supermarkets can blunt us on that a little bit nowadays.
Yeah, you can go and get tomatoes 365, apples all year round. You know, like that's stuff that, you know, you begin to understand why when you get a tomato in February, it doesn't taste as good as when you get it in June, when you get it in September.
Yeah, same with like the citrus when it comes to winter. I mean, at least when it comes to certain grocery stores, like, you can usually tell what season it is based on like when the organic is available or the organic version of it is available, but not always.
What is organic? Okay, I'm sorry.
What our grandparents used to call food.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, when it comes to this food and love language and all that, we've been learning from all sorts of places, but earlier you had mentioned you and your family watch a show or multiple shows. I figured maybe we could begin to wrap this up with perhaps shouting out and talking about some of our favorite chefs and creators that we've consumed the content of and you know, brought into our own worlds and kitchens.
Oh gosh, yeah. Well, you know, I grew up watching The Frugal Gourmet and Martin Yan from Yan Can Cook. And I would say that he has recently made a re-entry into my life as I began exposing his show to my kids. And it's great. He's still the same vibrant character that he always has been. Definitely his influence is strong. But you know, we watch, it's not necessarily appointment television, but there's something to be said for Friday night, Triple D Till I Z, which is something that happens on our couch frequently.
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
That's the one on Friday nights. Cause that's when it airs on the Food Network here.
Okay.
So yeah, triple D Till I Triple Z. Is Friday.
I hear it now. I hear it now. I think I might have missed it on the first go. That's awesome.
Yeah, but, you know, and that's what I really like about Guy Fieri's show is, I mean, obviously the guy's a character, and I got no bad words to say about him. But what I really like is his outreach and the fact that he really likes to showcase what these people who love food the same way that you and I are talking about it do, what they do for a living. You know, they people that have taken that love and turned it into a livelihood, and his ability to recognize that and really tell the story, put them on a proverbial map, in some cases a literal map. I just discovered there's a Triple D app, costs 99 cents, but it's a map of all the locations where he's gone. So like where you punch in a zip code and it pops up what's in 25 or 50 miles or wherever that zip code is, all the little pinpoints. And you know, I'm sure some family is making a killing on that, but I think it's really, really kind of cool to show, just show how broad that his reach is on top of all the incredible charitable work that he does. So I would have to say that Guy Fieri is an influence, maybe not from a culinary standpoint, but from a food standpoint. And on the same note, Phil Rosenthal, one of the head writers from Everybody Loves Raymond,
okay,
has a really good show on Netflix called Somebody Feed Phil, where he really has the best job in the world. He travels around the world and just lets people feed him. And he is somebody who appreciates food in a way that I would like to think that I could, because he is just open to it, and not like in a weird Andrew Zimmern, I'm going to eat a live octopus way, but just like, you're telling me this is good, I trust you, feed me. And he's a comedic writer, so inherently a lot of the things he says are just funny. It's a really enjoyable program, but the worldwide exposure to techniques and to foods is something that I just find fascinating. It's definitely like a go-to travel show when we're out of town or staying at a different spot, and all we have is the Netflix hookup on the Fire Stick. It's usually like, okay, so where do we leave off with Somebody Feed Phil?
Yeah.
Where was he last? And that's where we're going to pick up next time. You know, we rarely, as much as we enjoy the show, we rarely watch it at home, but it's definitely something that I think it comes to mind prominently when I think about food. And I mean, there are all sorts of chefs that I respect and admire, but you know, I try not to put people on a pedestal. I feel like trying not to meet your heroes is a good mantra to live by, because in the end of the day, we're all just people, and I'm not trying to hold anybody to a higher standard than I would hold myself to. But to say somebody like Dave Chang, I really appreciate what he has done for the world of food, and sort of making a younger generation appreciate how much rock stars chefs can be. I feel like he's got a really good podcast that showcases that, and one of the more fun podcasts that I've listened to called Recipe Club, where he and his chef friends will pick. They've got a wheel of death, and they you know, get handed some shit ingredient or some you know, something that they have to contend with, but then they all come back and make a recipe, and then they all compare and contrast each other's recipes, and you talk about some inside baseball of the cooking world. That is a show to hear.
That sounds uber nerdy. Oh my god. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned like the don't meet your heroes, like don't put them too high on a pedestal and such, because a large part of my journey was taken through just watching more or less bite-sized-y type cooking shows that were on YouTube.
Okay. You're talking about Chef John?
Chef John. Oh, love Chef John. His is more or less like cooking ASMR. Because like very yeah, little of it, it is
exactly what that is.
Yeah, it's like visual ASMR. Just watching a man just cook or just cut perfectly with his cleaver, and then just scoop it up very slowly and put it in the wok, and just you know. It, but very rarely does he like actually give you the like add 2 tablespoons of this, add that, you know. But at the same time, it's also kind of refreshing just to watch a guy like no specifically measured out ingredients, just grab a pinch of that, grab like almost like a small fistful of that, and just kind of begin pouring it in, and yeah, just Chef John, that's a good one.
I didn't mean to derail you though, but that
no,
you
said no, that. I'm glad
that was the first thing that came to my mind.
He's not one of the ones that I do hold to that higher standard, or I mean at that high pedestal, because he's earned it.
Sure.
But I also feel like he knows what he's doing, and he kind of sticks to it. The ones that I was talking about were I have some love for some YouTubers, but I feel like in the last couple of years they've begun to become more YouTube bait.
Okay.
In their initial starts were all about teaching you how to cook, or one in particular, his name's Binging with Babish.
Oh yeah, I know, but yeah.
Yeah, he had like two show, or he had split his channel kind of into two shows. One of them was he would cook something from a television show, you know, just as like he would, or he would like bring like a joke thing to life, or he would talk about, or like if somebody was like, oh, my mom makes a, you know, a really good this, and he's like, all right, we're making, you know, Raymond's mom's this from Everybody Loves Raymond, like so he would do that kind of stuff. But the other one was
It's
called Base.
noodles. That's two Everybody Loves Raymond references. I just
Oh, see, it's because you had my mind on it. But he, the other one that he did was called Basics with Babish, in which he would basically teach you how to make something. And he himself was on a cooking journey, so it was a little bit of him doing that, what I think like really new teachers do, where they're basically two or three chapters ahead of the class at any given point as they go through this the first time.
Learn as you go.
Yeah, and I think that's really what it was. It's like he himself had only done this a small handful of times, and he was doing the, here's what I've learned. But yeah, in the last few years, I feel like he's gone a lot more in the, and just like the, I'm gonna make a really big pancake because I got this new thing that was brought, or that's brought to you by this, like,
Sure.
you know. And so yeah, that one's felt a little bit more like, all right, well, you can't really be mad at him. I guess he's getting a bag, and
Sure.
that's at the end of the day, maybe what he was going for. Who knows?
Who knows?
But yeah, the other one was is Josh Weissman, who's he was working as a line cook at a really prestigious restaurant, Japanese restaurant in Texas, and he just started a YouTube channel where he was kind of teaching you how to do basics, or his idea being kind of like that ratatouille idea. Anyone can cook, as long as you just have the basics. And in fact, knowing the basics is the most important thing. I think he was trying more or less with the thesis of, you know, that idea that that people say when it comes to doing a pull-up, the most important thing is you just do one, because that's all you need to do to save your life. Like, it's, you know, doing two, that's all money. But if you do one, that's survival. I think that's kind of what he was going for, was like the idea. It's like, hey, like you should know how to make just the stock. Doesn't mean you have to make the stock, but you should know how to make it.
100% agree with that.
Yeah, and also that idea that, you know, hey, things can taste better if you don't just open up a jar and trust Smucker's to make your jelly. Like,
Yeah, you can always zhuzh it up a little bit.
exactly. And you can use things that are more to your liking. You can use a little bit of less of that, add more of this. And I think it's kind of, he was trying to unlock things in people that way, by like, hey, maybe if you just know some of the basics, you'll start experimenting, and experimenting will lead to growth, and growth will lead to you being much better at this.
Awesome. That's really neat. What say his name again?
Joshua Weissman.
Josh Weissman. Nice. I'll have to check that
Yeah, he has two books. The first one's really cool. It's all, again, it's a lot of basics. You know, he teaches you how to make your own butter and such, and then ends it all the way with like making more like advanced things, like how to make your own cookies, and you're using that butter that you've made.
out. Have you ever made your own butter?
I have, but it was like an arts and crafts project, I think, in the fourth grade for me, where we just in a group were just running, or basically, you know,
The
shaking a
mason jar,
jar. Yeah, shaking a mason jar over and over again, and then
yeah. That's a fun thing to do. If you had kids, or if you don't have dairy allergies, go get yourself some heavy cream and a mason jar. Screw that lid on tight and shake it for a long time. But what's really strange is that you're shaking this water, shaking this milk or this heavy cream, and then all of a sudden you start feeling it lump, and then all of a sudden you're shaking this chunk of butter.
yeah, that was kind of the arts and craftsy portion of it, is we were put into like groups, and instead of making one kid shake it for that length of time, it was, you know, the teacher doing more of that camaraderie thing. I remember there
Yeah.
being a stopwatch involved, and the, okay, switch it
Now
up, and the
pass
kid going, oh, thank God, take it.
it.
So yeah, Joshua Weissman's a really good one. He's since moved into like a new kitchen, and I think, I don't know if it's either to pay for it, or if it's just he realized that he makes more money doing more of the YouTube-y stuff. But yeah, and now he's doing more of the, like, his last video, I think, was something along the lines of like, I tried out the top 50 TikTok trends
For foods. And that's
for
I mean,
foods.
yeah, it's that sounds like some clickbait. but I bet it's interesting.
Yeah, but I'd say the earlier part of his catalog is really good, because he's also part of it is he had a challenge show that he called But Better, in which he would go to, you know, some fast food place and he'd order a Whopper, and he'd eat one of them and just kind of be like, all right, you know, he'd talk his shit on it because it was always fast food. It was always fast food, so he'd talk some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And after talking some shit, he'd kind of be like, all right, well, let's see if we can do this. And, you know, then he'd start like, all right, first thing I do is I do this. It seemed like there was a lot of mayo on it, so we're going to put this here. And then he'd, you know, taste test it amongst, you know, with himself. And like, usually it started off with just this camera guy, because it was clear that he was probably the only other guy in the room. But yeah, he would, you know, they do the like, oh, take one bite, take the other. Oh, that one's better. You know, blind taste test. And yeah, it was fun, because while it was kind of like, I'm going to do this better, he was also doing the like, hey, here's how you make a bun. Take 16 grams of this, 20 grams of that, you know, weigh it out, put this in. And then the last one, and I just got to shout him out, because I feel like he and your father are kind of simpatico after what you described at the beginning about note-taking and being diligent about the experimentation and the data.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard the name J. Kenji Lopez-Alt?
No.
He's something of a food scientist. He wrote for the blog Serious Eats. And he has a couple of cookbooks that are essentially the size of college textbooks.
Okay.
One is called The Food Lab and the other is called The Wok.
Like that.
And he's his whole like food journey is about finding things. It's a lot like Alton Brown back in the day. Finding the most scientific and efficient way to make something in your home kitchen.
Nice.
But what I feel like is the difference between he and Alton Brown is that Alton Brown really would take that extra step of being like, hey, like, I'm making it this way. Like, this is how, you know, this is the most scientific way to do this. I know that not everybody has this, so I'm just going to make this, you know, in my backyard or whatever. Kenji does more of the, hey, not everybody has this specialized cooking thing. Here's how you can make it in your oven.
Oh, that's cool.
But he also does but after many experimentations, here's the proper temperature I've learned to use, the proper coating to put on it before you put in there, the time.
That's awesome.
So yeah, if anybody's listening out there, if you take one name from my list here, it'd be J. Kenji Lopez Alt. He's just really good at explaining everything. He's all about, you know, the fun of cooking. And a lot of his stuff is very accessible, but if you really, really take anything from this small conversation, it's definitely go see Chef John. Just you know, if this is your thing, just go smoke some marijuana and just go watch some Chef John, man. It's good shit.
Yeah. Follow it with some Matty Matheson and you'll be fine.
Oh, God. Hey, everybody, you just got done watching Chef John. Now I'm going to show you how to make a Philly cheesesteak.
I like his energy, but every time I watch him cook, I feel like I can feel my own heart congesting.
Yeah, yeah, I'm having the heart attack for him. Maybe that's the magic. One person who watches the YouTube video has the heart attack for him, and he lives for another day.
That's how he's able to stay alive. Oh shit! What if we've discovered it? We're not on YouTube, are we?
We're creating myths now. We've created lore. All right. Well, I think that's a perfect place to end it. Brendan, where can they find you on all the socials?
At my belongings at Blue Sky and Twitter. Not for long. I think I'm going to delete my Twitter pretty soon. I'm about done with that business. It's become such a right-wing swamp. I have no problem with another perspective, but I definitely don't like the way that it's gone. But that's another story for another day.
Trust me, if it wasn't for the really awesome Devils community that I follow, who just, you know, are really fun during the season, I might have to delete it during the summer when they're all on summer vacation.
Sure.
But until then, you can reach me there and at all the things at the Ronarchy. You can also reach us, the whole pod, on Twitter at WYWFpod and on Instagram at YesWeFriends. You can also shout out our email, YesWeFriends, all one word, at gmail.com. But I would like to thank you again for listening to another episode of YS for Friends. And as always,
horses do piss tons. I'll go ahead and leave it. Yeah.
Try those coconuts, those walnuts and donuts. There ain't many nuts like they. We'll sell you two kinds of red herring, yeah, and dark brown and ball bearing. But yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today.